Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I'm Brian Lehrer. This is my Daily Politics Podcast from WNYC Studios. It's Monday, September 21st. The girl who was known when she was a teenager as the rabbi of her summer camp in the Adirondacks has died. For the record, it was Camp Shenawa in Minerva, New York, and I was a counselor at the boys' camp down the road, Balfour Lake Camp, except I was there 30 years after her. Here's a clip of Ruth Bader Ginsburg that is relevant since she died as Rosh Hashanah was beginning and that hasn't been played a million times this weekend on every network. 40 seconds, she was speaking in Israel in 2018.
I am a judge, born, raised, and proud of being a Jew. The demand for justice, for peace, for enlightenment runs through the entirety of the Jewish history and Jewish tradition. I hope that in all the years I have the good fortune to continue serving on the bench of the Supreme Court of the United States, I will have the strength and courage to remain steadfast in service of that demand.
Justice, peace, and enlightenment, the goals that RBG took from her Jewish heritage, for the record, on this third day of the new year, 5781. Later in the show, listeners, we will do much more by way of tribute to Justice Ginsburg, including your calls on what she meant to you. But first, back to the present. And because the presidential campaign wasn't in high gear enough, now we have this fight over who should get to nominate the next justice. And if you haven't heard this yet, here's the starting line. It's Lindsey Graham, who is kind of in charge of this process now. He's chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee, which would hold the hearings. Here's what he said in February 2016 after Antonin Scalia died and President Obama nominated Merrick Garland.
I want you to use my words against me. If there's a Republican president in 2016 and a vacancy occurs in the last year of the first term, you can say, Lindsey Graham said, let's let the next president, whoever it might be, make that nomination. And you could use my words against me and you'd be absolutely right. We're setting a precedent here today, Republicans are, that in the last year, at least of a lame duck 8-year term, I would say it's going to be a 4-year term, that you're not going to fill a vacancy of the Supreme Court based on what we're doing here today. That's going to be the new rule.
That was clear, Lindsey Graham, in that election year. But now it's never mind. By the way, he has a history of this. Anyone remember when Graham said this about Donald Trump in 2015?
Well, I'm going to talk to the Trump supporters for a minute. I don't know who you are, and I don't know why you like this guy. I think what you like about him, he appears to be strong when the rest of us are weak. He's a very successful businessman. He's going to make everything great. He's going to take all the problems of the world and put them in a box and make your life better. That's what he's selling. Here's what you're buying. He's a race-baiting, xenophobic, religious bigot.
Okay, never mind. So what happens next? With me now, CNN political analyst and Wall Street Journal national politics reporter, Sabrina Siddiqui, whose Twitter feed right now is mostly RBG with a dash of Zendaya at the Emmys, and she is definitely following the NBA playoffs because we all need some kind of relief during some hours of days like these once in a while. Hi, Sabrina. Just a Monday morning with nothing to see here, right?
Right. Good morning. Never a dull day.
And congratulations on your Lakers, but we'll leave that to some stations down the dial. And Trump... Trump and McConnell, are they really going to do this, try to ram through a nominee before the election?
You better believe it. And they've made it quite clear. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell didn't waste any time when the news of Justice Ginsburg passing emerged on Friday night in announcing that the Senate will move forward with President Trump's nominee whenever we have one. And President Trump himself reached out to Senate Republicans and is urging them to proceed. We, I think, always knew that if the tables were turned, and this were a Republican president, and it was an election year, that same rule that McConnell set forward with the Merrick Garland nomination in 2016 under President Obama, that it wouldn't hold up, and that he would most likely reverse on that same pledge if he had the opportunity to confirm a Republican president's nominee. So it's not surprising. The question is really going to be what happens with those vulnerable Republican incumbents who are up in November and are facing a lot of external pressure not to move forward.
What do you mean Republican incumbents? Those in the Senate?
Those in the Senate. We have a couple of Republican senators who have already come out and said that at a minimum, they should not move forward prior to the election. And that includes Senator Lisa Murkowski of Alaska, Senator Susan Collins of Maine, who is in a really tough re-election battle down in the polls. There are a couple more. Senator Cory Gardner of Colorado is up in a very tight battle for his own re-election. And he has so far said that the nation should mourn Justice Ginsburg's death before we get involved in the politics. He seems to be trying to buy more time with respect to a position. Senator Joni Ernst in Iowa kind of signaled she wasn't sure how she would proceed. She hasn't said anything one way or the other that's definitive. There are a few senators that I think everyone is watching right now. You know, the Democrats have raised an extraordinary amount of money since Friday, Democratic outside groups working in this election. And so whereas the Supreme Court and just the judiciary in general have often been galvanizing issues for the Republican base, for conservatives, this may be the first election where it is a galvanizing issue for Democrats and for progressives.
Just remind us of a little bit of the Senate math here. If all the Democrats stick together in opposition, is it four Republicans who would need to decide that this is unconscionable to confirm someone 5 minutes before an election? Is it four Republicans who would need to defect?
Right. They would need four defections, because if they have three, then Vice President Mike Pence can cast the tie-breaking vote. So there need to be four defections. It's possible it's not just those who are up for re-election. I think a lot of people will wonder what Senator Mitt Romney has to say about this. You know, there were some unsubstantiated rumors, it turns out, that he was going to oppose confirming a justice before the election year, and his office came out and said that that was not true, but they didn't necessarily say how he would vote. Of course, we know that Senator Romney voted to remove President Trump from office in the course of the impeachment trial. What does he think about precedent and what people now refer to as the McConnell rule of having kept that seat vacant for a much longer period of time? That vacancy came up in February of 2016. We're less than 2 months away from the 2020 election. So we don't know where those votes could come from and how this battle is going to play out. It also might depend on who President Trump nominates and how polarizing that person is. We all thought it couldn't get much uglier than the confirmation fight surrounding Justice Brett Kavanaugh in 2018, and here we are.
Let me bring up another Republican name that I've heard who might go against it, and that is Chuck Grassley of Iowa, who, in fact, before Lindsey Graham was the chairman of the Judiciary Committee. I've read that he has said in the past that he would not vote to confirm somebody under circumstances exactly like these. What can you tell us about Chuck Grassley?
Well, I think that is exactly correct, that he was one of the senators who initially said he wouldn't think that he was in the same position under a Republican president in an election year. He didn't think that the Senate should proceed with a nomination. Now, we haven't really heard much from him on this matter, and we have seen, you played that clip from Lindsey Graham, some Republicans who were very definitive in taking a similar position now reversing that view and finding a way to rationalize it. Senator Ted Cruz is another one who in 2016, of course, opposed filling a vacancy under President Obama. And now he said, well, we could have a contested election and we can't run the risk of having only eight justices on the Supreme Court. Well, we could have had a contested election in 2016. I'm old enough to remember when then-candidate Trump said in the flatly in one of the debates that he might not accept the results of the election depending on how people voted. So, you know, it's not a new problem. We have Bush v. Gore. We have precedent for there being a contested election. It's not uniquely a 2020 issue. Some of them have also said, well, that was a Democratic president and a Republican Senate. The people have clearly decided that they want a Republican White House and a Republican Senate at least through November. So we should honor that commitment as if, you know, they didn't make the 2016 election a referendum on the Supreme Court. So people are going to contort themselves, is what I'm trying to say, into and twist themselves into a pretzel to try and argue why this is different. I think a lot of it will also depend on the polling. And there was a Reuters poll just over the weekend showing that a majority of Americans think they should keep that seat vacant until after the election. And that included 5 in 10 Republicans. So that was interesting. Seemed to be that nearly half of Republicans or half of Republicans polled seemed to think that that seat should remain vacant and not and be decided and be filled by the next president.
Right. And that's a national number, which means it doesn't mean that much. You have to look state by state where Republican senators are up for re-election or where it could play into the presidential race in a very close swing state and whether that opinion would be, you know, something that people would actually act on to determine their votes any differently than the way they were going to vote before. Justice Ginsburg died on Friday, so the public opinion top number on not appointing a justice this quickly doesn't necessarily control the narrative, but it certainly is an interesting data point and interesting, you know, measure of where at least the majority of the people and even a lot of Republicans, as you say, are in theory. Abdul in the Bronx, you're on WNYC. Hello, Abdul.
Yes, good morning, Brian. My question is, do the Democrats have a pathway to unseat the nominee if Republicans are successful in putting one after the nomination happens? Do the Democrats have a pathway to unseat in a constitutional way?
Abdul, thank you very much. Yeah, let's talk about what the various options would be for the Democrats if a justice does get confirmed, but then a Democrat wins the White House and the Democrats take the majority in the Senate. There's a host of scenarios. And I guess to Abdul's specific question at first, would there be a way to unseat a confirmed justice? I'm guessing probably no.
Not to unseat. You know, people have talked in the past about what remedies Democrats have at their disposal, and they're just limited in their options. And I think that, you know, it also depends on what the makeup of the Senate will be after the election. But if that justice is already filled, I think that that position will then remain. There were calls, of course, for them to figure out, you know, what if they took back control of the Senate, a way to unseat Justice Kavanaugh. And we know that that's not going to happen, regardless of the outcome of the election. So I don't think that that's really much of an option. I think the question is, if Republicans are not able to fill that vacancy before the election because of some of these vulnerable incumbents, then there are some scenarios that have emerged with respect to special elections and some senators potentially taking the oath of office before January, so in a lame duck session. The Arizona Senate race is one example where if Democrats are able to take that seat, then you could have the senator-elect, I think, take that seat or fill that seat by November 30th. And I think the same holds for Georgia, where there's a special election. So there are a couple of states where people are keeping an eye on the outcome, where they're very tight elections, and perhaps they could change the math before January, when people are typically sworn in. If they change the math in a lame duck session and Republicans have yet to fill that vacancy, then there may be an opportunity to stop President Trump's nominee.
Well, that's interesting. And that raises a whole other scenario that we hadn't even broached before, which is if the Democrats win the presidency and a majority in the Senate, that the Mitch McConnell-controlled Senate would go ahead and confirm a nominee even under those circumstances? You think that's possible?
I think we should expect Mitch McConnell to confirm a nominee under any circumstance whatsoever if he has the votes. They care about filling the judiciary with as many conservative justices as possible, whether that's the Supreme Court or judges in the federal judiciary. In fact, I would say one of President Trump's most enduring legacies has been the ability with a Republican-controlled Senate to pack the courts, in essence. And so I think that even if you have a president-elect Joe Biden and a Democratic Senate set to take office in 2021, Mitch McConnell will do whatever he can in a lame duck to try and jam that nomination through. What would be the public backlash? We don't know. But it's a ways away from the 2022 midterms. So I think the calculus would be that there wouldn't really be that much blowback. This is always a base issue, the Supreme Court. I don't think that the suburban voters and the independents, who many people believe will decide this election at the presidential level, are not necessarily motivated by the Supreme Court. So this is really an issue that both parties see as an opportunity to energize their base, to raise a lot of money, and to boost turnout from within their own base. And so that's the kind of politics that Mitch McConnell is looking at. And that goes back to your point where at a national level, 5 in 10 Republicans might not actually mean so much. I think a lot of these Republicans are going to make the calculus, and that's why it's not surprising Lindsey Graham flip-flopped on his position. You know, what do Republicans think in South Carolina? What do they think in North Carolina, where Tom Tillis, who also said he would vote to move forward on the president's nominee, think? And a lot of those voters probably think that Republicans should go ahead and fill this seat.
And what about Lindsey Graham's own election? I think I read in your paper in the Journal that there are some close polls between Lindsey Graham in deep red South Carolina and Democrat Jamie Harrison.
They're absolutely, I think there are a couple polls that have shown this effectively tied, which is fascinating for a state like South Carolina, a reliably conservative state where President Trump has been up in the polls and is certainly expected to carry without any difficulty. But I think that Lindsey Graham has had a very difficult time trying to position himself in a Trump presidency. You played the clip of Lindsey Graham in 2016 or 2015 during the course of that election, appealing to Trump supporters. He called him a racist and he said all kinds of other things about how Trump was effectively a con man. Now he's been one of President Trump's closest allies in the Senate. And so I think what has happened and why you see that race really tightening is Lindsey Graham, in the eyes of many voters, embodies everything that's wrong with Washington. Mm. And it's been so transparent, the way in which he has done an about-face on virtually any issue that was really at the core of his campaign, of his politics or ideology. And he hasn't exactly won support from Trump voters, who kind of still see him as a figure of the establishment. No matter how much he tries to cozy up to Trump, I think they always will see him as a figure of the establishment. And they will always remember that he was one of Trump's most vocal critics. And then by that same token, he has turned off any moderate voters who had hoped that he would stand his ground.
Michael in Brooklyn, I think, is calling to say, yes, it is okay to go ahead with a nominee now. Michael, thanks for calling. You're on WNYC.
Yeah, hi, Brian. How are you?
Okay, thank you.
I do think that if the Democrats under Obama had the majority in the Senate, they would have pushed through that nomination. I don't remember the guy's name, Garland.
Yeah, Merrick Garland. And you're right, yeah. They didn't have the nomination. And certainly they thought at the time that they would have had the right to do that. That part, I think, is indisputable. It was February of the election year. But then Lindsey Graham and Mitch McConnell explicitly, since they had the power and wanted to block that nomination then, they set this as a new standard. You don't nominate a Supreme Court justice if a vacancy occurs in an election year. And here we are in late September of the election year. So to say that they would have, is that enough?
They're politicians, they're hypocrites. And so, I mean, Democrats are also hypocrites, not just Republicans. Politicians are hypocrites.
Therefore, what though? Don't worry about consistency at all, just go with your side? Is that the standard that you want to set?
Not my side. I just
anybody's
side.
The
president has the right. The president has the right to nominate somebody.
Michael, thank you very much. do you reflect a lot of people, Sabrina?
Well, I think everyone thinks that both parties can be hypocritical, that politicians are by nature often hypocrites. But I think to your point, yeah, sure, of course, Democrats would also confirm a nominee in an election year, but the standard here was put in place by Republicans. You know, it's Mitch McConnell who set this standard, who set this precedent, not Democrats, and therefore that doesn't really get at what this argument is really about. In fact, this even came up with Kavanaugh's nomination in 2018 when one of the first questions reporters asked was, does this count as an election year? It's a midterm election. In fact, it's even closer, more closely tied to the Senate because we are looking at the makeup of the Senate and have a number of tight races or had a number of tight races in 2018. And the argument Mitch McConnell used at that time was, well, the Merrick Garland rule, that would apply to a presidential election. This is a midterm election, so it's different. Now we're in a presidential election, and now he's moved the goalpost by saying, well, we have a we have a Republican majority in the Senate and a Republican White House. Last time it was a Republican Senate and a Democratic White House. So he's moving the goalpost. I think that's quite clear. And that's because they've boxed themselves into a position that is untenable if you're trying to rationalize it. But again, it goes back to, you know, there was no doubt in anyone's mind that Mitch McConnell was going to find a way to try and rationalize why this year is different. I think what it really raises is a question of what do Democrats do if they win the majority and the White House? I think you're going to see a lot more support for eliminating the filibuster. I think you're going to see a lot more support for packing the courts, for perhaps even expanding the number of seats on the Supreme Court. These are all progressive these are proposals that progressives have really been hammering for a while. That why do Democrats continue to be bound to precedent and to norms when Republicans have virtually shattered all of them during the Trump administration? You're going to maybe see a much different Biden presidency than what he has pitched so far, positioning himself as a moderate, because he even signaled that Republicans are the ones who are now pushing the country to the brink.
Sabrina Siddiqui, national politics reporter for The Wall Street Journal, CNN. Political analyst, thank you for all this morning. I know you've been working nonstop, and when we booked you for this segment last week, Ruth Bader Ginsburg was still alive, and we thought this was going to be a lot easier today. So thanks for coming on and keeping that appointment. Talk to you again.
Thank you so much. Take care.
Brian Lehrer, a daily politics podcast, is an excerpt from my live daily radio show, The Brian Lehrer Show, on WNYC Radio, 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time, if you want to listen live at WNYC.org. Thanks for listening today. Talk to you next time.